from the capital city of Charleston, West Virginia, this is Inside West Virginia Politics with Mark Curtis. Inside West Virginia Politics is brought to you by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State.
Hello and welcome to Inside West Virginia Politics. I'm Mark Curtis.
And I'm Amanda Barron. On the show this week, celebrating a milestone where West Virginia has made a mark at the national level.
Plus, if you are frustrated with your cable service, we will tell you about a class action lawsuit. But first, a controversial bill died in the House this week that some said was heartless against the homeless.
Yeah, but parents said it was to protect their children.
Here's my interview with the bill's sponsor.
We're at the state capitol, and I'm with Delegate Doug Scaff, Democrat, Kanawha County, who is also the minority leader and also the sponsor of maybe one of the most controversial bills this year. What bill number was it, and what did it do to address the issue of homelessness in West Virginia?
House Bill 4753. It was here in the House of Delegates, and we ended up moving it to a study resolution. The bill was intended to help provide services and shelter for our people, but just require them that they can't do it next to schools or daycares to help keep our students safe.
Yeah, it would have been put a 1,000-foot buffer between any homeless facility and a school or a daycare. There was some controversy because, especially with the city of Charleston, which obviously has the worst problem in the state, being the most populous county, I think some of the city council members and the mayor thought that maybe the legislature and you in particular were trying to encroach on their home rule.
Hey, listen, I'm the last person that wants to encroach on the municipal's rule and whatnot. I think we just need to do more as a state, as elected leaders. We need to come together from elected officials, from providers, from schools, from parents, faculty, staff. Everyone needs to come together. It's the homelessness issue is about mental health. We need to do more to help these people get them away from being homeless. And then the bottom line here is we can do both. It's not an either or. We can provide for our homeless people and keep our children safe. All I was saying is we treat schools differently. There are laws on the books that treat schools differently now. The last thing we need to do is not put our children's safety at risk.
Let's talk about this because it's not just a Charleston issue. In particular, our group of six stations across West Virginia, every one of our communities has a homeless problem. In particular, Wheeling has a problem. And I know that when you mention mental illness, we're also talking about the substance abuse piece of that and how do we deal with the drug use among the homeless and get them help.
You know, this bill, the one thing it did do, House Bill 4753, it restarted the conversation that we have a crisis in West Virginia. It's a national crisis, but we need to treat it like the opioid crisis. We need to put all our resources together, bring people from all around the state, all those people who, whether they provide services currently or intend to provide future services, but they need money and they need resources. We as elected officials, out of this bill will come a study resolution to see what we can do to do both. And number two, I've had conversations with Speaker Hanshaw to put together a select committee of 15 bipartisan legislators that we're going to work all through the summer to develop pieces of legislation to address the homelessness issue and the mental health crisis.
I wanted to talk about that because that's very unique. A lot of times the two parties are at, you know, loggerheads here, you know, pounding each other. But this is going to be a bipartisan effort because, you know, there's no such thing as a Democratic homeless problem or Republican homeless problem. This affects all of our communities in a myriad of ways. And I think it speaks a lot of you as the minority leader and the speaker to say we have to do this together as a bipartisan effort because homelessness affects everyone, not just the homeless, the other people in society, too.
Listen, this shouldn't be a partisan issue. It never was and it never should be and it never will. Homelessness affects all West Virginians and it affects people from outside our state. We need to come together, put our party politics aside, just like we've done on other issues, like the Coalfield Community Comeback Plan. We worked on that all summer long. Monumental pieces of legislation are passing through to help those communities in need. We need the same thing. Put our party politics aside. Quit making this a political issue. We can keep our children safe, make our schools safer, and provide services for the less fortunate.
And is it likely that we're going to see a full-fledged homeless bill come back to this legislature next year? I mean, we're down to 9 days left in this session.
It's not likely you will see this bill come back up this session, but this bill will go into a study resolution, which means we will work on it. We will bring all parties to the table. We'll bring the church pastors and the clergy, and we'll bring parents, teachers, faculty, staff, legislative leaders from around the state, as well as local municipalities and their council members to see what we can do. This isn't just a Charleston problem. Wheeling, Morgantown, Huntington, Clarksburg, Parkersburg. I've had legislators volunteer from all these areas that want to help. It's time to quit talking about it. We need to put some action behind it. And if anything, if I had to take a lot of the heat for this bill, that's fine. But the last thing I want to do is not have anything come out of this. I want to put action in place and we all come together as one to help our people.
All right. We want to thank Delegate Doug Scaff, Democrat of Kanawha County, the minority leader. Obviously, we will keep an eye on the homeless issue. It's not going away. And we'll look for solutions coming up in the next legislative session. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you, Mark.
We'll have more of Inside West Virginia Politics after this break. Don't go away.
Inside West Virginia Politics is brought to you by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State.
And we are joined now by a frequent guest on this program, Attorney Rusty Webb here in Charleston. Good to have you back on the program. Good to see you. Lots to talk about. Let's start with the most recent thing you've done. You filed a class action suit against Suddenlink, the cable company that operates across West Virginia, particularly here in the Kanawha Valley, that is not very popular with its customers. What's the nature of the class action suit?
Well, Mark, the nature of the class action suit is to bring Suddenlink to task for its abysmal service record as it relates to its customers. I filed this class action on the heels of what I consider one of the best public service commission rulings ever, which found a number of violations and service issues by Suddenlink. Researching it before, developing it before, but once that ruling came down, I decided it was time to file.
Let's talk about that for a little bit, because the Public Service Commission fined Suddenlink
$2.4 million.
$2.4 million, which is supposed to be sent back to customers in terms of rebates, and I don't know that it'll wind up being all that much per customer.
$16.85.
$16.85. Well, I'm a customer, so I'm looking forward to getting that back. But look, we had public hearings where people just got up and vented. The Public Service Commission wants a call center in this state to take care of state customers, not offshore somewhere where sometimes you can't even understand the person trying to help you. I had a personal experience. I did the thing where I signed up to get the cable added to my internet service, and they said, well, stay at your house between 10 and 2, and the service tech will be there to hook you up. Never showed. Never called.
I've had the same exact experience.
I canceled the service.
I'm streaming. I'm watching some of these Netflix shows right now, and without fail, three times a night or six times a night, the show stops. So I have to go back to regular cable TV and watch something until it
stops buffering.
Starts buffering.
So what can you accomplish with the class action lawsuit? Are you trying to get more money for the customers, or ultimately,
yes,
what's the end product?
Well,
here,
more money for the customers, the only way to get a corporation's attention who absolutely has zero interest in customer service is you have to hit them in the pocketbook. And when you hit them in the pocketbook, then they will hopefully upgrade their service so they don't get hit in the pocketbook another time.
Or you get competition, and now we got the CAS cable from Parkersburg coming into Charleston
that's
going to offer alternative service.
And FiberNet's upgrading, I understand.
Yeah. So, well, keep an eye on the situation. This is a popular subject, unpopular subject.
There are a lot of things we don't agree on in this country right now, but we agree that we all hate Suddenlink.
All right. We'll keep you posted on how that develops. Let's talk about the other big thing you're involved with. You were recently at the Attorney General's news conference where he announced a formula for dividing up money, abatement money, that came out of these multiple lawsuits against the drug makers, of which you are representing about three dozen different municipalities in West Virginia.
Well, one of the issues that we had to correct in an effort to get the settlement negotiations started, we had to show the defendants that we had a distribution plan in West Virginia, and through General Morrissey's leadership, we kind of stumbled in the wilderness for about 2 years, but we had a meeting with the AG where he took the lead, and we came up with a memorandum of understanding and a distribution formula for all counties and cities and for the state and for this trust fund that is extremely unique that the Attorney General devised himself.
We are down to a minute here, and we always use the word abatement because we want to be clear to the viewers, this isn't going to give Huntington, say, $10 million for past expenses. This is going forward with treatment, prevention, education, law enforcement. Talk about that for a second.
Well, that's what it does. First, it'll put X amount of money in each city and county so that they can start their programs. But on a much larger scale, it'll be divided. The big money will be divided amongst six regions, the DHHR regions, where these entities and other people can apply for grant monies. The large money is in the trust fund.
All right, we're going to keep an eye on this as it develops and as that money becomes available, obviously, to abate the opioid crisis in the state. We're also going to keep an eye on the Suddenlink suit as well. Thank you, Attorney Rusty Webb. As always, good to see you here on Inside West Virginia Politics. We'll have more after this break. Stay with us.
Inside West Virginia Politics is brought to you by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We are joined this morning by West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Fresh off your trip from Washington, D.C. at the Supreme Court. Yeah. I would imagine that every lawyer thinks about, you know, potentially going there one day. You and your team had the opportunity to be there to talk about the EPA and what you say are some sweeping broad brush regulations. Tell me how you think your argument went.
Well, I think the arguments went well, and this is a landmark case. It's West Virginia v. EPA, and it's probably one of the single most important cases in West Virginia's history.
Talk about it. Go back in time,
there was a case in 1871, there was a case in 1911 when Virginia and West Virginia were fighting with each other. This is probably up there near the top of the list. And here's what it's really about. If you think about it from a West Virginia perspective, it deals with our energy resources and what type of regulation the EPA can impose on the resources in our state. But if you go beyond that, it's really about who gets to make the major decisions in our republic. Should it be Congress or should it be an unaccountable bureaucracy like the EPA?
And this would relate to any department, the precedent, I would imagine.
It has huge implications, okay, even beyond the EPA, and that's why it's so important and everyone's been focusing on it. But for West Virginia in particular, it matters for the price of electricity that you pay. It matters for jobs. It also matters just about the size and scope of government. Whatever the big issue is, if it's a major question, we're asking to have clear statement from Congress delegating that authority to the agency.
If it doesn't come up in your favor, what do you think? What does it mean for West Virginians?
Well, I think it could be very harmful because then the Biden administration is going to be able to run down the field without much to stop them. And that's a real problem because just even on the narrow energy issues of, hey, West Virginia has about 86% of the power derived from coal. Let's say you take that to 20 or 30%. Everyone's going to pay for it wildly at the power grid, and that's going to hurt our state in a way that we haven't seen before.
And as I understand it, this relates to something back during the Obama administration.
Well, it does. In fact, many people watching may remember that we obtained the historic stay of the Obama Clean Power Plan back in 2016. So this is really a lot about the Obama Clean Power Plan and whether it's going to spring back to life or not. We, of course, don't want it to, and that's why we're hopeful and we put a lot of time into this case. But now it's up to the court. Decision's going to be probably by the end of June.
Okay, that's what was my next question. So you got that. Let's move on to the opioid settlements that your office has been very focused on. You know, everyone in West Virginia know someone or has felt the effects in one way or another of the opioid crisis. And some might say there isn't enough that can be done to help, you know, pay for the problems that it's caused and the residual effects. Your office is working towards settlements, some we know about, some we don't know about, and some are still to be litigated.
Yeah.
Where do we stand right now as communities go ahead and take a look at what you're proposing, the money, how the money is divvied up?
Absolutely. So we had a huge development just a couple weeks ago where I was able to reach agreement with representatives of virtually all of the counties and cities in the state of West Virginia. And the reason that's so important, it determines what the structure is going to be in terms of how the money's going to get spent, and also the allocation between the counties and the cities. So this is a really big deal. Trust me, it was not easy. 4 months we were going back and forth because everyone is always trying to argue for more.
Sure.
The good part about this here is that a significant percentage of all the dollars are going to actually fix the problem for relief. It's the West Virginia First program, and it's going to be a foundation, and it's going to have the opportunity to have a lot of expertise managing how the dollars get spent. But the great part about it, it's really going to hit those areas which were hardest hit during the opioid epidemic. There'll also be a significant amount of money that goes directly to the counties and cities to address some of the issues like regional jail fees. A lot of people have heard about that. So I think there's something really good for everyone here. And now this allows us to speak with one voice so we can negotiate and obviously fill up the bucket for West Virginia. Now, I've held out on a lot of these settlements.
And you've been criticized for
that. I think people are going to see West Virginia is going to do as well or better than any state in the nation. And I think this framework that we've put together is going to be an important part of that.
So what is next in the opioid litigation front?
So we have a couple things going on. One, the Purdue case is on appeal, and that could represent anywhere from $80 to $125 million for the state. And then separately, we have trials beginning April 4th against some of the drug makers, Johnson & Johnson and Teva and Allergan. And so we're getting ready for that. And we want to make sure that there's accountability with those who are involved and in part responsible for the opioid epidemic.
Much more to come, and we'll be asking you about that. And hopefully you'll come back and talk about it.
Yeah.
Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And a very busy week.
Yes, we are not lacking in work in the AG's office.
That's for sure. All right. Thank you so much. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Inside West Virginia Politics is brought to you by AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State.
Well, welcome back. We're joined by West Virginia State Treasurer Riley Moore. Good morning, Treasurer Moore. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Certainly appreciate it. You guys are celebrating a big milestone. You have a 20-year-old now. Smart 529.
Yes.
Turning 20 years old. Tell people at home who aren't familiar about Smart 529 what that program is.
Yes, the Smart 529 is our college savings plan here in the state. And we're proud to say here in the Treasurer's Office, it has been ranked by collegesavings.com as the best direct savings plan for college in the entire country. Yeah. We now have over $3 billion assets under management in there. A ton of participants. We're making good earnings for the people that have these accounts. It is to save money for college, and you can start today. One of the nuances to this is that you can now use this for K through 12 as well. So it's not just for college. You could also use it for K through 12 for some supplemental educational materials or classes if you'd like, or for private school for that matter.
Sure, I think everybody can agree when you invest in education, it's one of the most important investments that you make 20 years strong. There's a lot to say for that. What do you attribute to that longevity?
Well, it's been a really long road to hoe in terms of getting the word out on this program. It's a federal program, but certainly my office has worked very hard at getting participants into this. And we have a tremendous amount of West Virginians who are saving for college now. And that number just continues to grow year in and year out. And it's through the hard work of my staff that I'm so proud of.
And I think, too, when you can make something into an app, because there's an app for that now.
Yes.
And so when you can make something into an app, it's almost something as simple as if you're sitting on the couch watching TV, maybe you see a little reminder on the news about Smart 529, you could just sit there and look into it that easily.
You can manage your Smart 529 now through an app on your phone. That was something we rolled out last year.
Yeah.
And it's part of our modernization process we've been undertaking here in the Treasurer's Office across the board.
Yeah, it's important. And as you guys celebrate the birthday, there's a lot of sweet treats. We thank you for the cookies, newsroom.
Yes.
Always enjoy a little treat there. So we're happy to celebrate that 20th birthday as well. The Hope Scholarship period opened this week. And that is something that parents will be able to use to fund a portion of their child's education funding to tailor an individualized learning experience that works best for their child. So that's a lot of words. Boil that down for me.
Sure. So the Hope Scholarship, that opened March 1st, and it stays open until May 15th. Okay. And what you're able to do is take your portion of your students' funding for the state, which is around $4,600. And if you would like to take those dollars and choose to take it to, say, homeschool, whether you would like to take it to a private school, Christian school, whatever it might be, this is providing educational freedom here in the state where you can take your tax dollars and decide what the best educational path is for your child.
We're hearing a lot about energy these days. You know, obviously we're dealing with the conflict in Ukraine, but also, you know, some people would also say that there is this war on traditional energy that's going on here at home. You guys in your office, in the Treasurer's office, have been focusing on Senate Bill 262 targeting banks that are boycotting fossil fuel industries. Talk a little bit about where that stands right now.
Yes, so that Senate Bill 262, it has passed the Senate. It has passed the House Banking Committee. It is pending in the House Finance Committee.
Okay.
It is our understanding that it will run. We're waiting to see when that takes place. We're confident that it will get over the line. But this bill is about banks that are boycotting the fossil fuel industry. Mm-hmm. There's a clear conflict of interest for us to give them money that's generated from coal and gas. Right. And at the same time, these banks are trying to destroy those industries that are so important to us here in West Virginia. And as you mentioned, Ukraine, the context of that, all of these European countries are so reliant on Russian coal, gas, and oil. Right. If we could increase production here in the United States, we'd actually be able to help some of our Western allies right now. We want to do business with folks that want to do business with us. Mm-hmm. And that means our industries, that means our coal miners, that means our folks working in the gas industry. And if you're diametrically opposed to that, I don't think anybody here in the state thinks that we should be giving them money to make dollars off of our tax dollars.
How do you balance that with the folks who would say, well, we have to start focusing on new energy and cleaner energy?
Well, look, I'm certainly not opposed to folks that want to build wind turbines and solar panels, and that's great. Would add, though, most of that is subsidized. Coal and gas doesn't need any subsidies. All they need is the government to get out of the way and then let them perform, and they can get the job done. If they weren't able to get the job done, you wouldn't have these countries in Europe starving right now for gas and still relying on Russian gas. You watch European countries shift very dramatically over to renewables, and it's been to their detriment. We need energy independence in this country. Energy independence is energy security.
That'll do it for this week's edition of Inside West Virginia Politics. Thanks for joining us.
Have a great week, and don't forget, we are a podcast, so you can listen to us anytime, anywhere. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Inside West Virginia Politics. You can hear more from state, local, and federal lawmakers each and every Sunday morning on WOWK-TV in Charleston, WBOY-TV in Clarksburg, WDVM in the Eastern Panhandle, WTRF in Wheeling, and WVNS in Beckley. You can also find a new episode of the Inside West Virginia Politics podcast right here on this feed every Monday morning. If you like the show, make sure to leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Inside West Virginia Politics is a Nexstar Media Group production, hosted and managed by Mark Curtis. Inside West Virginia Politics is recorded and edited inside the studios of WOWK-TV in Charleston, West Virginia. All rights reserved.